This is America in the Morning from Westwood One. Good morning, I'm John Trout. It's Monday, April 29th, 2024. Here's what's coming up on America in the Morning.
Some universities say there will be consequences for pro-Palestinian protesting students.
It is an intimidation tactic.
I'm Jim Roop.
Deadly tornadoes tear through parts of the Midwest.
Every business in downtown has been destroyed.
I'm Clayton Neville.
A potential GOP VP candidate may have ended her chances. I'm Pamela Furr.
Hollywood figures court win, then a trip to the emergency room. Julie Walker has details.
Get set for an economic data overload, a Fed rate decision, a corporate earnings deluge, and quite a bit of stock market volatility. I'm Peter Schackbaum.
Regulators have closed Republic First Bank, a regional lender operating in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York. I'm Norman Hall.
Flu season is winding down. I'm Haya Pinjwani.
All ahead on America in the Morning. Pro-Palestinian protesters continue to clash with police on college campuses. Jim Roop reports depending on the school involved, students may or may not face consequences for their actions, even those that violate school policies.
Conflict a world away causes clashes on college campuses here. What was supposed to be expressions of free speech results in arrests for violence and vandalism, yet while some universities are holding students involved in unrest accountable, others are saying there will be no consequences for students. For example, Boston's Emerson University, where nearly 120 people were arrested for public disturbance and an unlawful encampment. University officials say, quote, the college will not bring any campus disciplinary charges against the protesters and will encourage the district attorney not to pursue charges related to encampment violations, end quote. And on university campuses where officials say there will be consequences, such as Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, the protesters, many of them students, like Armin Dindar, tell the National Desk they don't believe them.
It is an intimidation tactic from the university that they have been using for so long.
Physical clashes over the weekend have happened yesterday on the campus of UCLA and problems on the campus of the University of Southern California, USC. LA's Mayor Karen Best says, oh, there will be accountability.
Well, I mean, if somebody is committing a crime, I know that one of the things that was happening at USC yesterday was vandalism around the campus. And obviously that is unacceptable.
Brown University sent letters to students warning that disciplinary action could be doled out if they continue to violate school rules regarding the ongoing encampment there in protest against the Israel-Hamas war. The encampment reportedly must be cleared today by 5 p.m. or there will be consequences, so the university says. There have been arrests at Northwestern, Arizona State, Indiana, and Washington University in St. Louis. All told, there have been more than 800 arrests of protesters since April 18th, when the first arrests occurred at Columbia University in New York. It is still unclear exactly how many of those arrested are students, however, in all of those universities. The protests by the pro-Palestinian groups want the universities to divest completely from any connection to Israel, and they're calling for an immediate and permanent ceasefire. Those protesting in support of Israel say to them, what has been lost is that Hamas struck first.
Hamas and ISIS from Gaza attacked Israel on October 7 at 6:30 in the morning. They attacked people in their home.
Those in support of Palestine say it's about the innocent lives lost in the Israeli counter-offensives. The rhetoric rages on, as does the Israel-Hamas war. I'm Jim Roop.
Deadly tornadoes ripped through the Midwest and Southern Plains. Correspondent Clayton Neville reports on where the twisters hit.
Widespread severe weather over the weekend experienced in Texas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and other Midwestern states, with twisters spawning across the region.
I mean, you just can't believe the destruction. Like, it seems like every business in downtown has been destroyed now here in Sulphur.
Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt was assessing damage in Sulphur, Oklahoma, near the state's border with Texas, when he said at least four people were killed in the storms.
One was here. Just right here on the corner. They just removed her body, and two in Ada, and then one Marietta, is that right? One up down in Marietta.
The lives lost, clearly devastating, and so is the damage to small-town businesses.
Just like that, all the tax revenue, all these businesses in downtown Sulphur just overnight have been wiped out. So we need to help help Sulphur rebuild. Yeah, just devastating.
Governor Stitt says he's in contact with federal officials about getting help as soon as possible.
She offered her assistance. I told her to thank the president. We're working on the damage assessment. We have Anna with the Emergency Management Department. She'll be working on all that.
More than 150 storms were reported in the Midwest on Saturday alone. And on Friday, dozens of tornadoes were seen in at least six states, including Iowa and Nebraska, where businesses and homes near Omaha were damaged. Governor Jim Pillen.
I just came from a couple of the locations of Ground Zero. And let me tell you, it's extraordinarily sober. You know, if you think too close, it's an emotional experience.
As the week begins, the aftermath sets in. A severe storm season is in full force across the Midwest. I'm Clayton Neville.
Disgraced Hollywood movie mogul hospitalized. Details when America in the Morning continues after these messages.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen. Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Welcome back. You're with America in the Morning. A rough weekend in the weather department. Let's get an update on where we might see severe weather today. Here's AccuWeather.com meteorologist Matt Rindy.
It was a difficult and challenging weekend for many folks across the Plains states, with significant severe weather through many areas as tornadoes became widespread. That same storm system will continue to progress eastward today. There will be some heavier thunderstorms along the front in parts of southeast Texas, eastward to Louisiana and Mississippi. There is still a chance for some flash flooding, damaging winds, and hail. Farther to the north, that same cold front will lead to more scattered showers and thunderstorms through parts of eastern Arkansas into Alabama, northward to Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. Though not reaching severe levels, there is still a chance for some heavier rainfall. More showers will develop on the western side of the low-pressure area through Minnesota into North Dakota, some of which could mix with snow in parts of northern Minnesota. The rest of the plains will be largely dry with sunshine returning. Highs will range from the 60s and 70s in the north and central states, then warming quickly into the 80s and 90s in Oklahoma and Texas. While ahead of this front, it is going to be quite warm through many of the eastern states. Most places are going to have plenty of sunshine with temperatures well into the 80s and even a few 90 degree readings. Some records will likely fall. And New England will be the exception to this warm up, with the frontal boundary leading to some cooler conditions, more clouds, and even a few showers. Another system will be moving into the northwest with several showers along it and maybe even some snow in the mountains. It is going to be a record-breaking day in Baltimore, Maryland, with plenty of sunshine and a high of 92. St. Cloud, Minnesota will have a chilly day with plenty of clouds and a shower or two and a high of just 49. That's the nation's weather. I'm AccuWeather.com meteorologist Matt Rindy.
I'm John Trout. Remember to follow us wherever you get your podcasts: Apple, Spotify, Amazon, YouTube. Just search America in the Morning in your favorite listening app. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, considered a potential running mate for Donald Trump, is defending an excerpt from her upcoming book, a confession in which she writes she shot an untrainable and dangerous dog. More on the story from Pamela Furr.
Noam spoke about the decision to kill the pup in her forthcoming book, No Going Back. The Guardian first picked up the story of Noam saying she tried to focus the dog's aggressive personality into hunting. But she says in the book that didn't work, so she led the dog to a gravel pit and shot it. The story created a firestorm on social media with questions about her viability as a VP pick. Noam has spent the weekend trying to explain, at first saying the shooting is something that is part of the darker side of farm life. But on Sunday, Noam posted on X, she, quote, understands why some people are upset about a 20-year-old story. She goes on to say, the fact is, South Dakota law states dogs who attack and kill livestock can be put down. The explanation isn't softening the blow for both Democrats and Republicans alike, with some going as far as saying her political career may be over. Noam's book is set for release May 7th. I'm Pamela Furr.
Soon after disgraced Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein's rape convictions were overturned in a New York court, he was rushed to a Manhattan hospital where he's still undergoing tests. Correspondent Julie Walker reports.
One-time movie mogul Harvey Weinstein is in Bellevue Hospital undergoing testing after being transferred from an upstate New York prison to the city jails, according to his lawyer. This came a day after a Thursday ruling vacated his 2020 rape conviction after concluding a trial judge permitted too much evidence not directly related to the charges. While prosecutors say that case will be retried, Weinstein is still serving time for a California rape conviction. Meanwhile, the 72-year-old has been ailing with a variety of afflictions, including cardiac issues and diabetes. His attorney, Arthur Idala, says he's somewhat of a train wreck health-wise. Julie Walker, New York.
When we return on America in the Morning, the Fed. More excuses than answers. When America in the Morning returns after these messages. This is America in the Morning. The Business Report is sponsored by Fisher Investments. Fisher Investments takes a disciplined approach with investing, helping clients navigate volatile markets. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Today could be a wild ride on Wall Street. In with Monday Business, CNBC's Peter Schachnow.
Wall Street is set for its version of the perfect storm. It's the busiest week of corporate earnings season, with about a third of the S&P 500 reporting. There's a loaded schedule of economic reports, capped by the April jobs report on Friday, and perhaps most significantly, a meeting of Fed policymakers on Tuesday and Wednesday. Last week might have given us a perfect example of how the stock market's mood can shift in an instant. The market slumped Thursday when new data showed slower than expected economic growth while the fight against inflation rolled on, but it rallied strongly Friday following strong earnings reports from tech giants Alphabet and Microsoft, among others. The conflicting forces are among the reasons BMO Capital chief investment strategist Brian Belsky thinks the market will ultimately end the year about where it is now.
We do believe that the market has been more about FOMO and more about momentum and more about sentiment. And we believe many of our compatriots that do what we do have kind of left their process and discipline and try to chase the market. So the Fed's going to be on hold longer than everybody thinks. We're investors longer term. We're still very bullish, but we think we get a better entry point.
As for the Fed, it's expected to keep rates unchanged when it issues its latest decision Wednesday, but it's the commentary about inflation which will sway the market. Krishna Guha is in charge of the central bank policy team at Evercore ISI.
The single most likely outcome is that the Fed is able to cut rates in either July or September and get another one done by the end of the year. But that's hanging by a thread. At this point, the Fed simply can't move forward until and unless they get a step down in the monthly pace of inflation. Until and unless that happens, they're stuck.
And just as it was this past week, encouragement from earnings reports might take away from any disappointment generated by the Fed. Among the highest profile reports, Amazon, which reports Tuesday afternoon, and Apple, which will issue its quarterly numbers after the closing bell on Thursday.
Peter, seems we get more excuses than anything from the Fed concerning inflation.
There's no question that taken as a whole, trying to tamp inflation down has not been as successful as the Fed would like. But Stony Brook University economics professor Stephanie Kelton suggests that focusing on every aspect of inflation is to miss the big picture.
This continues to be a really good story about where we are in this economy. The consumer is strong. The labor market is good. I don't think it's a huge problem. Inflation is coming in line with expectations. We got a very good thing going here. And we're, you know, focused on second decimal points and whether we get all the way back down to 2%.
Last week's inflation data did see month over month increases come in as expected, as opposed to surprisingly hot. So there is at least some evidence that slow progress is being made.
In for Jessica Ettinger, CNBC's Peter Shacknow. When we return on America in the Morning, bank failure plus flu season. An update on the numbers. Back after these messages. Welcome back. Here with America in the Morning. Republic First Bank has been closed by Pennsylvania state regulators in what the FDIC said was the first U.S. bank failure this year. Correspondent Norman Hall reports.
The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation says it seized a Philadelphia-based bank, which did business as Republic Bank and had roughly $6 billion in assets and $4 billion in deposits as of January 31st. Fulton Bank, which is based in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, agreed to assume substantially all of the failed bank's deposits and buy essentially all of its assets. The FDIC says Republic Bank's 32 branches are reopening as branches of Fulton Bank. I'm Norman Hall.
It appears the worst of the flu season may now be behind us, correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
Medical visits for flu-like illnesses dip below the threshold for what's considered an active flu season for 3 weeks straight. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Other indicators like hospitalizations and patient testing also show low and declining activity. No state is reporting a high amount of flu activity, but New England is seeing the kind of patient traffic that's usually associated with an active flu season right now. Since the beginning of October, there have been at least 34 million illnesses, 380,000 hospitalizations, and 24,000 deaths from the flu. The Centers for Disease Control has also said 148 children died from the flu. I'm Haya Panjwani.
America in the Morning for Monday, April 29th, 2024, is produced by Jeff McKay. Senior producer Kevin Delaney. I'm John Trout. This is Westwood One. This is America in the Morning from Westwood One. I'm John Trout. Coming up this half hour,
the White House Correspondents' Dinner brings some edgy jokes. I'm Clayton Neville.
President Biden's increasingly trying to score laughs on the campaign trail at Donald Trump's expense. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A former Colorado paramedic convicted of homicide has avoided prison and been sentenced to probation. I'm Norman Hall.
A top Qatari official has urged Israel and Hamas to do more to reach a ceasefire deal. I'm Karen Chamas.
More rights for farm workers and a Trump-DeSantis meeting. Details ahead.
Actor Nicole Kidman is the recipient of an AFI Life Achievement Award. I'm Margie Zaraletta with the latest.
Tennis and sex dominated the box office this week. I'm Kevin Carr.
Back after these messages. Welcome back. Here with America in the Morning. It's going to feel like summer today in many parts of the nation. Here's AccuWeather.com meteorologist Matt Rindy.
It is going to be quite warm through many of the eastern states. We're going to have plenty of sunshine and temperatures climbing well into the 80s and even a few 90s. Some records will likely fall in a few places. And then New England will be the exception to this warm-up. Still going to be a nice day. We'll have a frontal boundary leading to some more clouds and even a few showers. But heading to the other side of the country, we have a storm system moving into the northwest today with several showers along it. It will also have some chillier air associated with it, allowing for some snow in the Cascades into the Rockies, and there could be a slushy inch or two. And farther south from California into Utah, as well as Arizona and New Mexico, we're expecting a lot more sunshine with afternoon temperatures near or slightly above the historical average. In the Plain States, it was a difficult weekend for many folks, with more than 100 tornadoes having been reported from Nebraska and Iowa southward to Texas and Oklahoma. That same frontal system will continue to progress eastward today. There'll be some heavier showers and thunderstorms in parts of southeast Texas, eastward to Louisiana and Mississippi. There is still a chance for some flash flooding, damaging winds, and hail. Farther to the north, that same front will lead to more scattered showers and thunderstorms through eastern Arkansas into Alabama and then northward to Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. Though not reaching severe levels, there will still be some heavier rainfall. More showers will develop on the western side of the low through Minnesota and North Dakota, some of which could mix with snow in parts of northern Minnesota. The rest of the plains will be largely dry with sunshine returning. Highs will range from the 60s and 70s in the north and central states, and then warming quickly into the 80s and 90s in Oklahoma and Texas. That's the nation's weather. I'm AccuWeather.com meteorologist Matt Rindy.
I'm John Trout. Remember to follow us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, YouTube. Just search America in the Morning in your favorite listening app. President Biden was the deliverer and the butt of jokes during the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner over the weekend. Correspondent Clayton Neville files this.
Politicians, journalists, and celebrities who were at the White House Correspondents' Dinner navigated pro-Palestinian demonstrators outside the event. Inside the dinner, President Biden toasted the Constitution.
To a free press, to an informed citizenry, to an America where freedom and democracy endure.
The dinner was hosted by Saturday Night Live comedian Colin Jost, who went after the president with a slew of jokes.
The economy is kind of like you on the steps of Air Force One. It feels like it's stumbling, but there is somehow upward progress.
The president had jokes of his own.
Age is an issue. I'm a grown man running against a six-year-old.
Aimed at his opponent in the presidential race, former President Donald Trump.
Age is the only thing we have in common. My vice president actually endorses me.
He even touched on Trump's legal issues.
Well, Donald has had a few tough days lately. You might call it stormy weather.
That, of course, a reference to the current hush money trial Trump's facing in New York City surrounding porn star Stormy Daniels. Trump released a statement after the correspondents' dinner Saturday night, calling it, quote, really bad, and saying that the host bombed and Biden was an absolute disaster. I'm Clayton Neville.
While President Biden lobbed one-liners at Donald Trump at the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner, Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports the current president appears as though he will continue using humor to attack the former president.
President Biden's increasingly trying to score laughs on the campaign trail at Donald Trump's expense, aiming to get under his predecessor's thin skin. Trump's own insult comedy shtick is a hallmark, and few opponents have figured out how to crack the code of getting back at him, whether by taking the high road or insulting him. Lately, the president's been like a comic testing new jokes on the road. After years of Trump calling him Sleepy Joe, the president noted at the White House Correspondents Association dinner, Trump appeared to doze off in court.
Sleepy Don. I kind of like that. I may use that again.
He says age is an issue in this campaign.
I'm a grown man running against a six-year-old.
Jokes are the norm at the annual dinner, but the real meat of the president's stand-up routine of sorts comes during campaign speeches. Last week, he remembered Trump suggesting injecting bleach to ward off COVID.
He missed it, all went to his hair.
A day earlier, he noted Trump called the Supreme Court ruling overturning abortion protections a miracle.
Maybe it's coming from that Bible he's trying to sell. Whoa. I almost wanted to buy one just to see what the is in it.
The president rarely references Trump's court cases, but last month had fun with Trump being ordered to pay $454 million in a civil case.
Just the other day, a defeated-looking guy came up to me and asked if I could help. He was drowning in debt. I said, I'm sorry, Donald, but I can't help you.
Trump, of course, lobs his own insults, describing the president as feeble, crooked, demented.
Because we're the ones who are fighting to save our democracy, and crooked Joe Biden is the demented tyrant. He's a demented tyrant who is trying to destroy our democracy.
His campaign says the insults will intensify as the president tries to give his successor a taste of his own medicine. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Donald Trump's favor among some Americans has continued to rise. A new CNN poll shows 55% of voters say they now view Trump's first term as a success, while 44% see it as a failure. A January 2021 poll taken days after the U.S. Capitol riot showed that 55% of voters at the time considered his presidency a failure. President Biden's disapproval numbers are rising. 61% calling his presidency a failure, and nearly 3 in 4 disapprove of his handling of the Israel-Hamas war. Overall, the survey found 49% of those polled say they're expecting to vote for Trump in the 2024 election, compared to Biden's 43% in a head-to-head matchup. And with Biden 9 points behind Trump, when you add in a third-party candidate, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Cornel West, and Green Party candidate Jill Stein, we could see numbers of projected votes for either of the leading candidates decrease. Shifting gears, a paramedic in Aurora, Colorado, who was found guilty of criminal negligent homicide, has avoided jail time, closing out the last of the 3 trials surrounding the 2019 death of Elijah McClain. Correspondent Norman Hall has the update.
The 2019 death of Elijah McClain was among those that fueled racial injustice protests in 2020. Jeremy Cooper had faced up to 3 years in prison after being found guilty in a jury trial last year of criminally negligent homicide. Cooper administered a dose of ketamine to McClain. The 23-year-old had been forcibly restrained after police stopped him as he was walking home in a Denver suburb. I'm Norman Hall.
When we return on America in the Morning, among the stories we're covering next, Trump and DeSantis meet, farm workers get more protections, and an alleged bathroom spy after these messages. I'm John Trout. Welcome back. This is America in the Morning. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is heading to Saudi Arabia to try to restart ceasefire negotiations in Gaza as a delegation from Hamas is in Cairo in parallel talks to the Saudi meeting. As correspondent Karen Shamas reports, Qatar, which has been in the center of the talks and also hosts the Hamas leadership, is attempting to broker a peace deal and hostage release between the terror group and Israel.
If we can get that in place, then that gives you 6 weeks of peace. It gives you no fighting for 6 weeks, and that includes no fighting in Rafah. And what we're hoping is that after 6 weeks of a temporary ceasefire, we can maybe get something more enduring in place.
In interviews with Israeli media, Qatar's foreign ministry spokesperson, Majed Al-Ansari, expressed disappointment in both Israel and Hamas for still not reaching a new deal. He said each side is making decisions based on political interests and not with the good of civilians in mind. Qatar, which hosts Hamas headquarters in Doha, has been a key intermediary between the two. There's growing international pressure for Hamas and Israel to reach a ceasefire deal and avert an Israeli attack on Rafah. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Riyadh, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas warned against the proposed Israeli attack on the city in southern Gaza.
Only a small strike is all it takes to force everyone to leave Palestine, and we will be witnessing the greatest catastrophe in the history of the Palestinian people.
I'm Karen Chamas.
Governor Ron DeSantis and former President Donald Trump seem ready to put their feud from the Republican presidential primary aside. The Washington Post is reporting that the pair met in Miami to discuss how they can work together during the general election, and that it's believed that DeSantis agreed to help Trump, which includes tapping into the governor's donor base. Both Trump and groups allied to the former president are lagging behind President Biden and Democrat groups in donations. Trump and DeSantis have reportedly not spoken since the governor dropped out of the primary following a poor showing in Iowa. America in the Morning continues. Temporary farm workers are getting more legal protections against employer retaliation, unsafe working conditions, illegal recruitment, and other abuses. Lisa Dwyer reports.
The rule announced by the Biden administration aims to bolster support workers on H-2A visas. Each year, hundreds of thousands of immigrants, mostly from Mexico, take on seasonal jobs in U.S. agriculture. The new rule requires farmers to provide transportation for long distances, prevents retaliation for meeting with unions at provided housing, and implements safeguards to help counter human trafficking, among other requirements. Pro-labor groups applaud the changes, while some business groups warn of excessive regulatory burdens. The rule takes effect June 28th. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Political pushback on a proposed ban on a type of cigarette. Correspondent Ed Donahue has details.
The Biden administration is indefinitely delaying a long-awaited ban on menthol cigarettes.
It has anesthetic properties and qualities that help mask the harshness and irritation of tobacco smoke.
The FDA says it would prevent hundreds of thousands of smoking-related deaths over 40 years. Health Secretary Javier Becerra gave no timeline for issuing the rule, saying more time is needed to consider feedback, including from civil rights groups. About 80% of black smokers use menthol. Reverend Al Sharpton and other civil rights leaders have warned a ban on menthol would create an illegal market for the cigarettes in black communities and invite more confrontations with police. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Indicted, a former flight attendant accused of using a cell phone to record images of youngsters in airplane lavatories. With more on the story, here's correspondent Jackie Quinn.
36-year-old Estes Carter Thompson from North Carolina has been in federal custody since January. Last September, on a flight to Boston, a 14-year-old girl reported he led her to a restroom in first class. But when she spotted red stickers on the underside of the toilet seat and spotted a phone, the girl captured that evidence on her cell phone, and her parents reported it to authorities. Investigators say Thompson's iCloud account contained images of four other youngsters using a plane lavatory, along with hundreds of images of child sexual abuse. Thompson faces at least 10 years in prison if convicted. I'm Jackie Quinn.
The three big tech giants have all posted stock gains this year, with major new data centers being announced. Chuck Palm has details in today's Tech Report.
Tech stocks are reporting in, and Google's parent Alphabet has posted its first ever dividend on Thursday and a $70 billion stock buyback. Google has been spending billions of dollars on new data centers to catch up with rivals on generative artificial intelligence. Just 3 months ago, big tech rival Meta Platforms, parent for Facebook and Instagram, also announced its own first ever dividend that boosted their value by $196 billion the very next day, leaving Amazon as the only big tech holdout that is not offering a dividend this stock season. In related news, Google expands its data centers to Indiana and Virginia, citing higher demand for server space for the AI market. Google announced on Friday they would invest $3 billion to set up new data centers in Indiana and expand existing sites in Virginia. Amazon also announced on Thursday $11 billion for the Hoosier State to build new data centers, creating 1,000 new jobs. Visit allthetoptech.tech for more tech news. I'm Chuck Palm.
America in the Morning's Robert Workman has Monday Sports.
The Minnesota Timberwolves became the first team to advance to the second round of the NBA playoffs, beating the Suns 122-116 to sweep that series in four games. Neither team led by more than 6 points all night. Anthony Edwards had 40 for Minnesota, Devin Booker 49 in the loss for Phoenix. The Knicks are just one win away, slipping past the Sixers 97-92 behind a career playoff high 47 from Jalen Brunson.
There's no extra to that. It's just we win, we move on, and we figure out how can we be better.
Pacers push the Bucks to the brink, hitting a franchise playoff record 22 threes in their victory for a 3-1 series lead. The Clippers built a 31-point lead and held on to beat the Mavericks by 5. That series now 2-2. The New York Rangers swept out the Capitals 4-2 to become the first NHL team to advance to the second round. Avalanche buried the Jets for a 3-1 series lead, a hatter for Valeri Nichushkin. Canucks rallied past the Predators in overtime. Brock Boeser had a hat trick, the last two goals coming in the final 3 minutes of regulation before Elias Lindholm netted the winner 62 seconds into OT. Vancouver up 3-1. Oilers have a 3-1 lead after last night's 1-0 win over the Kings. Stuart Skinner, 33 saves. Baseball, the rubber game between the top two teams in the majors went into extras Sunday. Austin Riley's 10th inning RBI single gave the Braves a 4-3 win over the Guardians. Mark Vientos mashed a walk-off two-run shot in the 10th to lift the Mets over the Cardinals 4-2. Yankees barreled over the Brewers 15-5, a 7-run sixth, breaking open a tie game. Aaron Boone's offense is clicking.
Really good at bats, you know. I mean, how much of that 7-run inning was all two outs, wasn't it?
Man bites dog, the White Sox beat the Rays, the weekend sweep, doubling Chicago's win total for the season. Twins trample the Angels for their 7th straight win. Nationals wipe out a 7-run deficit to upend the Marlins. Astros rip the Rockies to sweep the Mexico City Series. Wins for the Phillies, Rangers, A's, Red Sox, Giants, Blue Jays, Diamondbacks, and Tigers. That's Monday Sports.
Thank you, sir. When we return on America in the Morning, Challengers, after these messages. Welcome back. You're with America in the Morning. Actress Nicole Kidman receives honors for her work on the big screen. Entertainment correspondent Margie Zaraletta reports.
Morgan Freeman made a joke about Nicole Kidman's AMC Theater's We Make Movies Better ad by saying, Nicole Kidman, she makes movies better. Kidman says her success is because she had aspirations of being an actor.
Australian or not, I'm just so honored to be on this list with the greats. And to be able to represent my country. I was obviously born in Hawaii. I've worked all over the world, but I'm an Aussie girl. And I'm standing here in Hollywood going, oh my God, it actually happened.
Among those honoring Kidman were her husband, Keith Urban, Meryl Streep, who made Kidman tear up, and Mike Myers, who showed up in one of the masks from Eyes Wide Shut. The AFI Life Achievement Award event will be televised on TNT on June 17th.
Like all of them. I've made so many risky films. I mean, to the point where people go, you're actually going to do that movie? And I'm like, yeah, I am.
I'm Archie Zaraletta.
Zendaya's tennis film was number one at the box office, and as Kevin Carr reports, it also marked a milestone for the movie's director.
The R-rated tennis-based film Challengers easily won the weekend box office, but whether it was a smash or just doing okay depends on who you listen to.
You were incredible today.
Thank you.
I mean, it wasn't even like tennis. It was an entirely different game.
With $15 million over the weekend, the Zendaya-led rom-drom beat other tennis movies by a mile, along with it being the biggest debut from arthouse favorite director Luca Guadagnino. But it's still got a long way to go to cover its sizable $55 million budget.
This is a game about winning the points that matter.
And number two is the faith-based unsung hero.
You have been given a beautiful voice.
She's a special one, David.
The Christian music drama brought in $7.7 million, about half of what Challengers made, but this has a much more modest budget of $6 million to cover, making it pretty much an instant success. Up next were a couple of springtime hits.
That's a call for war.
Godzilla X Kong made $7.2 million for third, and Civil War conquered $7 million for fourth.
We kidnapped a vampire. A ballerina vampire.
The horror thriller Abigail took fifth place with $5.2 million.
What happened to Kane?
I don't think it has attached itself to him. We have to get him to the infirmary right away.
In notable 10th place was the re-release of Ridley Scott's Alien with $1.6 million, showing there's still some interest in this 45-year-old sci-fi thriller. I'm Kevin Carr.
For Monday, April 29th, 2024, that's our show for today. America in the Morning is produced in Washington by Jeff McKay. Our senior producer, Kevin Delaney. I'm John Trout. This is Westwood One.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.